Good evening and welcome to As the Worm Turns. You are tuned in to KVNF's live call-in gardening show. I'm your host, Jill Spears, and I'm here with my favorite gardeners, of course, Lance and Lulu. Good evening.
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Fresh in out of the cool weather. And we've got a special guest in the studio tonight. It's Ron Godin. Hi, Ron.
Good evening, Jill.
Good.
Nice to be here.
It's great to have you again. And Ron has been here several times. Glad he's here again. He is an organic soil scientist. Ooh, yeah.
Just like everybody else around here.
It's a good thing, and that's what we need is healthy soil in the world, and I think you do a lot of that. So we're going to be talking about that tonight, and Jeff is in the control room ready to take your call because there's some really knowledgeable people here tonight that can answer your questions. Hello, you're one of them.
Right.
Okay. Right.
Okay, but you guys have to call in, okay? That's right. The deal.
Call in. Get ready. 527-4868, 1-866 KVNF now. Just getting ready for the show here. The little contest going on. Who's dirtier? And I mean, whose hands are dirtier? Whose clothes are dirtier? Who's been working today?
Well, Lance.
No contest. Right. Lance.
There's not really a contest. Lance wins.
I have my mud boots on.
He's got his
and they're covered with dandelion seeds.
Dandelion seeds. Nice. You've been in the muck today?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Good day for that. And we were talking about dandelions. We had an email from a listener, Patty, emailed in, and she saw two dandelions on one stalk. Is that common? Is that?
It's not common.
It's not common.
But I've seen it. Yeah.
But when you earlier, Jill, has anybody seen this before? And Lance and I just went, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then Ron suspects that it's
certain weather conditions at the right time when the when it's starting to germinate, possibly. There's lots of possible explanations, but yeah, it's at the right conditions at the right or wrong time, depending. But double-headed dandelions they're rare, but we see them.
We see them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was saying how there was a year in when I was gardening in Carbondale where I had an extraordinary amount of them. And it was the year when everybody was getting all bent out of shape about chemtrails. So
there's the connection.
So, so naturally, you know, there it is, right? And it was awesome. But there were a lot. And it wasn't just dandelions, it was other flowers as well. And that was what really piqued my attention, got my attention.
It does get your attention.
Yeah, it did.
Great year for dandelions. We talked a little about that last week. And all of the moths and different bugs floating around on the dandelions. Yeah, nice
great,
stuff.
Great pollinators. Great pollinator scene with the dandelions. Everybody loves them. They're crawling.
Good early food.
Yeah, good early food. Easy to get at. You know, it's a no-brainer.
Good for bees. Hopefully it warms up enough so they get out of the
so
hive.
So they can get out.
Right.
Yeah. Not today.
Not today. How are you spraying kelp today, Lance?
I did this morning.
You did this morning? Yeah, help those plants make it through the chill.
I did this morning, and it was because I'm not going to get home till after 7:30 tonight.
Mm-hmm. I'm covering some baby seeds that are just coming up.
I'm doing nothing.
There you go.
There are some things, if you've already planted, and some early stuff that I'm starting to see is showing some whiting on some of the older leaves. It's cold-induced deficiencies. Some nutrients in the plants, phosphorus is a big one, but also calcium and magnesium are others that when it gets really cold, especially when the soil stays cold, that the plant can't take them up. And so you'll see phosphorus, cold-induced phosphorus deficiencies and magnesium deficiencies in the plant. Even though the soil has plenty in it, the cold won't allow the plant to take them up.
I noticed some of my spinach leaves have that edge on them.
Yeah, especially the big leaf.
Yeah, some of the sorrel, the earlier sorrel had a lot of that paling.
Yeah, and it's just cold-induced. It's not really a deficiency in the soil. As a plant, just it's slow. moving so slow, it just can't take it up.
Right.
Poor things.
Hey, we have Joy from Hotchkiss on the line. Good evening, Joy.
Hi. Hello, everybody. Hello.
What's going on?
Well, I am I'm seeking land. I'm attempting to find land. And I have several, and I've been looking at several things. And I have possibilities in the Dobies. And I'm curious, is there anything that will grow? Like trees, and what veggies, and how could I make such a thing work?
In pots.
What kind of trees?
In pots
are
raised.
Any fruit trees that might grow there?
No.
And are anything like that?
Abandon your doby idea.
Really?
That's either raised beds or pots is the only way they'll grow. And no. Even if you dig a hole and put a bunch of good stuff in it, it's still going to be in a pot. The dobies is manco shale, which is heavy, heavy clay soils full of salts. So there's two strikes against you right there. It's tough to farm heavy clay soils, and salts is going to slow everything way down if it grows.
Yep. Yeah.
I would look elsewhere.
There's no trees at all, no good trees that would thrive in such soil.
Yeah, but we don't like them. Tamarisk will do well.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
With lots of water. But, I would look other places for better soils.
Yeah.
And you can call me and I can help you. Identify good and not so good places to farm and grow.
Okay. All right. So even with help, it's really not
so much.
Even if I didn't do it immediately, but if I just composted and composted and composted and just got an acre of it or a little bit of it.
Well, I got a short story. This lady I work with in Montrose. Her mom started an organic farm about 30 years ago, not on manco shale, but on heavy clay soils. And they were amending, they've been amending for 30 years. Whoa. And when I first talked to them, they had about 15% organic matter in the soil, but it's still a heavy clay soil and it's tough. It's tough. Tough to go. And so I would tend to steer away from it in some of the better soils. There's quite a few places with soils that won't beat you to death. The manco shale will just beats people to death.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. So
that's why it's cheap.
Right.
I know, and that's why I've been looking at it. It's like nothing grows. Nobody grows anything out there.
No.
Is there any hope?
Even Mother Nature won't grow stuff.
Right.
No. And they're usually exposed, wind exposed. A lot of wind out there.
Yeah.
So you take the mud and you make adobe bricks.
Right.
And you make raised beds.
Oh, yes.
And you make your raised beds. And you make a nice wall, and have one of those real little courtyard gardens. You could do that.
Yeah. Well, the raised beds. Yeah, I can certainly do that. And I figured I would do pots. But I was hoping that there might be some kind of a tree that
No.
You don't want to get your hands in that soil, Troy.
No. Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Joy. I appreciate the call.
Okay.
Thank
Bye.
You. Everybody wonders about that. I mean, there's just
I had it on
open
my list.
Space. Perfect.
They're tough. They're tough. Heavy clay soils, even without all the salts of the manco shales. I've seen it beat lots of people down to the point where they want to give up farming, and it's just not good, especially with
that's a lot
younger
of work.
People that have lots of enthusiasm, and then it just, after 2 years, they just say, oh, I'm done.
I'm out.
It's better just not to start with heavy clay.
Well, our soil's pretty clayish as well. It's tough. And if you don't, the minute you stop doing something, it goes right back to being good old.
Yeah, it's a clay loam we have mostly around here, but there's a lot of clay in it, but it's not like a heavy just clay soil.
No. Oh, I saw a dump truck going down the street the other day with this slimy black. I mean, I just thought, oh, my God, I'm so glad I didn't have anything to do with that dirt because it was just awful.
That snotty stuff.
Oh, and it was in chunks. It wasn't a dump truck full
blocks.
Of, yeah, it was, it was awful.
Hey, Max is on the line from Montrose. Good evening, Max.
Hi.
What's going on?
You were talking about the manco shale. This is not you, but your guest speaker.
Yeah, Ron. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So why is at 9,300 feet or and above, the manco shale does really not have much salt in it, and then yet down here it does. Do you know why?
Yeah, not specifically, but I can venture a guess. At 9,300 feet, you have quite a bit of moisture and precipitation, and that's what leaches salts out of soils, is lots of water and precipitation. That's how we get rid of, in regular farmland, how we get rid of salts in heavy salted soils, is to leach them out. And at 9,300 feet, they get quite a bit more moisture than we do at 6 or 5,000. And so that would be the reason that over the thousands of years, there's been lots and lots more precipitation to get rid of the salts out of that soil where there isn't at the lower elevations.
So then it just ends up down here on the east side of the Compadre and the Gunston.
Yes, unfortunately, on the east side of the highway is not.
I wonder, because I deal with it all the time. I have ditches up there from the 1800s that I deal with.
Right.
Wow. Yeah, and some of those hills are just like almost like coal. And it's pure mancus.
Yeah.
But after the years, sediment builds up. And if you don't mess with the mancus, you can really have a nice little bed for your ditch.
Oh, but sure.
Boy, if you touch that and you let something block it, you cannot stop the erosion that will happen with that mancus.
No. No, because there's hardly anything can grow on it at the lower elevations.
I did have an alpine fir that we had to take off this guy's property when I had to fix the ditch. We estimated about 118 years old.
Wow.
And the roots went like hundreds of feet up this little bank of black mancus shale.
Wow.
The little bit of surface soil you had on there, it was sticking to it.
Oh, yeah. Well, the problem was when the owner looked at me and I said it's going to fall. And he went, why do you know that? I said, because I said so.
I've heard that
if
before.
If I had never said that it was going to fall, it would never fall. But when we cut it, we did the rings and stuff. Yeah, it was crazy. But no, the mancus up there has no salinity, anything. And down here, I don't see it on the surface as much as I do up there.
Right.
Yeah.
But you say it has a lot of salt down here.
Yeah, it does. It's really high in salts. That's why the east side of the highway mostly grows hay. Some guys try to grow corn, and they will grow some short grains because they don't grow real tall. Plants have a really hard time taking up water and nutrients when they're in salty ground because salt holds on to water real tightly. So it's like the plant is trying to drink through a 10-foot straw. So that's why you get stunted growth a lot. But stuff will grow, but you'll get stunted growth.
Overhead or ground watering, what do you recommend? Overhead, like with sprinklers, is that better?
No. Well, it depends if how good the water is.
Okay.
If the water doesn't have much salts in it, then overhead is fine. But if there's a lot of wind, you're losing a lot of water just to the wind, the evaporation. So ground would be better, and you can get a better soak with the ground. I'm sorry?
They say that brings up the salt. That's the reason they really want you to do overhead instead of...
Overhead's going to bring up the salts also. What happens is when you irrigate, it dissolves the salts in the soil. And when the hot sun in the summer, the really hot sun of the summer, heats the surface, it brings the water with the salts up to the surface. And the fresh water evaporates and leaves the salts behind. That's why we see all this white stuff, which is not snow in the summertime, all over the place, especially on the east side of that highway.
No, just friggin' elm seed.
Yeah, that too.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Max. Appreciate
it. Nice explanation for what I was trying to figure out.
Okay. All right, good.
Great.
Appreciate the call.
You too.
Good to know. Bye.
Bye, Max.
Good to know you're listening down there, Max. And we have Ron Godin here, organic soil scientist, 527-4868-1866, KBNF now. Of course, Lance and Lulu are here as well. And there is a lot of crazy soil around here.
There is. It gets worse in some areas and better in some areas. But mostly we have, in general, clay loam soils. They hold quite a bit of moisture and quite a bit of nutrients, which is good, sometimes a bit too much because of the clay content. The higher the clay content, the more water they hold, but they don't give it up. If you have a clay soil, for example, in a foot of clay soil, you can put 5 inches of water. It'll hold 5 inches of water. But once 2.5 inches have been taken up by the plant, then the plant wilts. And the clay, like salts, hold onto it because it's like plates, and the water gets between the plates, and it won't give it up.
Oh, sure.
And so you can still have 2.5 inches of water in that foot of soil, and your plant is wilted. So it takes a lot more management to manage clay soils because you have to keep them wetter so the plant has enough water, even though they feel, wow, this is pretty moist, but why is my plant half keeled over? It's because the clay won't give it up. It just holds on to it real tight.
Yeah, what are some of the things we can do to help make that clay soil healthier?
Add organic matter.
Organic matter, here we go.
Cover crops, compost. Organic matter is like adding sponges into the soil. So a heavy clay soil is tough. You can't change the texture of a soil. And I have a good story. We may get into that later. But you cannot change the texture of a soil. If you look at a texture triangle that the USDA has, there's sand, silt, and clay. Those are the three particles. And if you have a lot of clay soils, it holds on real tightly. But as you add other stuff like sands, if it's naturally in there, it'll hold more water. But adding organic matter is as good as you can do. If you can get the organic matter percent to 3% or 4% organic matter, which is 4% is tough with our hot temperatures and not much rain, it's tough. But organic matter will help because you're putting sponges in there.
Yeah.
I just noticed that in these clay soils, every year, at a certain point, that it turns, no matter what you've done to that soil over, it turns hard.
It turns hard.
And we're at that point.
We're right there.
You know, so if you haven't tilled your garden,
you better do it now. Yeah.
Otherwise, it's going to be
concrete.
Yeah, it turns hard. And this happens in my yard.
Especially after this rain.
Yeah.
It'll just go completely rock hard.
Right.
But with the rain now, you're going to be able to get the tiller in there a little easier. There's going to be a fine line between when it's dry enough.
Yeah, that's that point we're working on now. Yeah. It's getting dry enough without this rain.
Yeah.
And even after you irrigate it, you know, half a day later it starts to crack.
Well, I have cracks in my garden. I have cracks. I have this one. Okay, so I have all these little gardens, right, all these little spots. And I have one where I've got these little bushes growing that I've been bringing along. It's a little nursery sort of area. And I don't have to do anything. And it's where the sorrel is. And it's cracked. I mean, it's got these huge cracks in it. And I've done so much to that soil.
You can't overcome the clay.
You can't. So what I'll do now is, see, I've got these huge cracks, right? So now I take some really good compost and I shove it in
the
cracks.
Fill the cracks with the compost.
Yeah.
I've done that.
Yeah. No, it works.
Yeah, and that's an easy way to get it in without tilling.
Yeah. And it goes right in. And the other thing that blows me away is if you water in the cracks, they never fill up. Never. Never. It's amazing. It's like a magic. There's like magic under there.
The water just keeps going.
It just keeps going and going. But anyway, that's what I do. If it cracks, I try to
stuff it.
So I stuff anything down there. You know,
newspapers.
I don't care. You know, I'm going to stuff something down there and
fill in the cracks.
Straw hay, grass. You know, anything. Just. You know, clippings, whatever. Just shove it in there.
Probably a Barbie doll head.
Oh, no. I wouldn't waste a Barbie doll head on that.
She's got a lot of Barbie doll heads in her garden.
Yes.
I do.
They're markers.
They are. And thank heavens for my friend Sam, who has a secondhand store in Carbondale, and she brought me a whole basket of Barbies. I have an endless supply now.
They loosen the soil.
Well,
In their high heels.
They're automatic aerators. They get off the stakes at night and run around with their little heads and heels.
That's the commotion I hear down the street.
Oh, Lord.
What kind of cover crops?
Cover crops.
Yeah. Oh, there's a good excuse to talk about something great.
Right. This time of year, oats is really good, but I would mix it. Cover crops, you want to use just annual crops. You don't want to use any perennials. Oats is really good. I was trying to put them both together. Cool weather crops are what you want to plant right now, obviously, because it's cool and they'll germinate in warm. Oats are really good because they'll germinate at 40 degrees. Lots of other cool season cover crops. A good place to look is at SARE.org. And on there, under publications, is a book that you can download for free. It's called Managing Cover Crops Profitably. Mm-hmm. And there's dozens and dozens and dozens of cover crops. Huh. But in the middle, on around page 48 or 49, if I'm not mistaken, there's a bunch of charts that will tell you what kind of cover crop it's used for, what temperature it germinates at, how much to put down per 100 square feet, how deep to plant it, which ones to get. And you can look through these charts and say, okay, it's cool season and I want a legume. Hairy vetch is even really good right now. It'll germinate. It won't grow real big, but any kind of cover crop seed that's cool season that will germinate in cool soil temperatures is good to go right now.
What's the name of that book again?
It's called Managing Cover Crops Profitably.
Uh-huh.
And it's for free download at SARE, Sustainable Ag and Research Education.org.
Great.
And there's plenty of other really good books you can download from there, Building Soils for Better Crops. There's lots and lots of good stuff that's free that you can download. But lots of good information on cover crops and which ones for what season.
Mm-hmm.
Like now would be a good time to plant a cover crop if you're planning on putting tomatoes in a couple of months, once we're past these freezes.
Okay.
But even a month and a half, 2 months is plenty of time for a cover crop. And then you can just mow it and just leave it and plant your transplants into it.
Mm-hmm.
And the mulch covers and keeps the moisture in the soil. The roots die back and give you organic matter without having to till.
The no-till thing, yeah.
Right.
Nice.
And it's that one little extra step, but you get so much bang for your buck out of it.
Yeah, really mostly cover crop seeds are fairly inexpensive compared to, you know, vegetable seeds and stuff like that. So
I planted my garlic last year in a spot where we tilled up a bunch of peas.
Mm-hmm.
And the little pea thingies, German sweet, I don't know what they are. Anyway, they're everywhere with the garlic, and I'm just excited.
Yeah,
They're just
go together.
Just right there, having a big time. Yeah,
what will be interesting is usually in companion planting, you don't plant allium, onion family, with the legume family. So just it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
They usually don't like each other, but go for it.
Well, it is going for it. No question about it. Yeah, we'll see who likes. We'll see who comes out.
You may end up with garlic flavored peas.
Who knows?
Ooh, that might be
or pea flavored garlic.
Yeah. I like planting when I take things out in midsummer, and I'm not going to plant any other edible crops. I'll plant buckwheat.
Buckwheat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, buckwheat's an excellent crop.
Yeah, and then a little bit later, I'll plant, I did just buy a 50-pound bag of field peas.
And that would be good.
And it was amazing. They were organic. Organic field peas.
Wow.
Cover crop.
Where did you get
those?
Right over here across the street.
Wow. Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, they go well together, especially in the summer, because you're fixing nitrogen. And buckwheat is really good because it has a good taproot in it. And so it can mine, literally. It can, since it's got a 3 or 4 foot taproot, it can get nutrients from 3 feet down and bring them up to the surface into the leaves.
Yeah.
And then when you chop it up or use it for a mulch or compost, then you get those nutrients that plants would not otherwise have access to.
Yeah. Yeah, another thing that's nice, it's a great bee food.
Yeah,
the insects that time of year just and it's pretty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
if you want to leave it,
And a good way to do it, if you had a large enough spot, is to plant it sequentially or in series. Just plant one row every week or every other week, so you've got buckwheat for several months for your bees and other beneficials that like it.
That's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah, keep it rolling like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the idea of getting a bed ready now for tomatoes, because we've been talking about how it's too early for tomatoes.
Oh, yeah.
So put a cover crop in there and experiment.
Especially a cool season one.
Yeah.
Oats is quick.
Oats.
Yep.
Yeah, real fast.
There's quite a few. It's better to mix them if you can. If you can find two or three that you can mix together, because the idea is coming out now. They're doing lots of research on it. But if you plant several species of cover crops at the same time, the roots take up different niches in the soil. They're not all the same rooted. And then you cut the tops, and you can increase the organic matter in your soil without tilling. And the tops keep the mulch, keep the soil covered.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it started in the Dakotas, but the NRCS has been doing a lot of research with it in the last 10 years. They're up to 12 and 15 different species of cover crops at the same time to try to take up as much of that soil niche as possible to grow as many roots as possible so we can increase the organic matter in the soil without tilling.
I think that's amazing. I think we're actually learning about ourselves while we learn about soil.
No, right. That's it, too. I've always heard that, that there's more organic matter under the plant than the plant brings.
Mm-hmm. Even on the scientists have calculated more biomass below ground than there is above ground.
Yeah.
And if you think how much there is above ground, it's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. 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 That's, I try not to pull plants. I chop them or
yeah, even with weeds, if you can cut them off at the surface, it leaves the roots for organic matter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, gosh.
That's beautiful.
Just, it's really coming around, the whole thing. Did you go see the Seed movie on Sunday?
No, I have. I wasn't here.
You were there, right?
I was there, yeah.
Yeah, that was amazing. That I just would love to say something about that, about how important it is to use really good seed to
good
be
seed.
Yeah,
acclimated to the
acclimated
area.
To your area, and these the library seed exchange thing that you don't really even have to exchange is just a treasure. And we should all start
good open pollinated stuff that's getting harder and harder to find.
Yeah,
right.
What did it say? 90% of the seed crops that were before World War II are gone.
And, you know, there used to be, 400 varieties of this, that, or the other thing, and now there's 20, you know. I mean,
they gave the list of something like that. It was pretty incredible.
They had an amazing list on there. And if you think about it, that's serious.
Yeah, that's our heritage. And our well-being for the future is gone.
Is gone.
Because we can't find all these open pollinated varieties anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
And these seed banks that are saving what's here now is another thing. And I'm going to be curious to see what happens with the CRISPR technology, that CRISP, K-C-R.
I don't know what that is.
It's a gene splicing technology, CRISP9 or something like that it's called. And it's a gene splicing technology that just makes it super, super easy to remove a gene and put a new gene in.
Oh, boy.
Madness.
Great.
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another vehicle to GMO technology.
Right? It's another GMO technology.
How do we sabotage this?
Yeah.
Bioorganic.
Bioorganic. And share seeds.
And open pollinated.
And build soil health.
Yeah.
And we've got a caller on the line. It's Len from Hotchkiss. Good evening, Len.
Oh, Len.
Hi. Ron, I have been planting for the last couple of falls a cover crop mix that I got off the Cornell website. That is 60% hairy vetch and 40% cereal rye. Last year, I couldn't get any cereal rye. If you plant it before August 15th or around August 15th and chop it in or mow it as late as May, the middle of May, the early part of June, they say you can get 7 tons of organic matter per acre. And the stuff, it's so thick out there.
Yes.
It's about a foot high with the vetch now, maybe a little bit more. And remember when I told you about the Gulf rye?
Yes.
And the purple mustard, there's a plant here and a plant there, and that's it.
Great. It's choking them out.
Yeah. And I also, last winter or last fall, I added a bunch of daikon to it.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Just to get the roots down there and break it up a little bit. It's not really compacted or anything else, but that dies out real fast in the fall. And you have all of those nice big roots there making holes in the ground.
That's they call them tillage radishes now.
Yeah.
Really? Oh, my goodness.
They're really good for breaking up compaction in soil and getting good aeration and opening up the soil.
Yeah.
Without having to till, they work great.
Yeah, and it leaves all those nice little channels for everything to move around there where the roots decay. So
great.
But just thought I'd throw that in there. So.
Thanks.
Thanks, Len.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Appreciate the call. He's having great success with cover crop. Yeah, choking out some weeds that were problem.
And improving the soil condition and soil structure. A lot of to get good soil structure, the way soil scientists look at it is soils are lots of tiny little particles. And if you can bring them together in clumps or clods that are, they're glued together with mucilages or glues that come from roots, that the roots exude, plant roots, and also from organic matter. But it glues soil particles together, and it pulls them together, and it makes channels for air and water and all kinds of microbes and arthropods to go through and churn up that soil. So it really helps to have good soil structure. And this is what organic matter will really helps with. And so does cover crops. By putting those plants in the – this roots growing in the ground brings microbes because it exudes it. All the leftover stuff from the plant goes out the root and makes food for microbes. So it makes really good concentrated food for microbes. So it brings a real – gives you a real living soil.
Yeah, living soil. It's, yeah.
That's
you can
what
see
I
the
like.
Difference. You yeah. can taste the difference.
Just on the legumes, though, do you suggest or encourage inoculation?
Absolutely. You have to. If you haven't – like if – Len probably got his hairy vetch and not pre- – a lot of legumes now come pre-inoculated.
Oh, okay, because they have the right one.
The right one on right on as a seed coat. Okay. Or you can inoculate. But there's different – we're inoculating. We're talking about rhizobia bacteria, which is a symbiotic bacteria with plant roots. And it can take nitrogen from the air and turn it into mineral – organic nitrogen, which then turns into fertilizer mineral nitrogen. Mm-hmm. But you got to have the right bacteria. And there's only several kinds. There's vetches, and peas and beans is another one, and alfalfa is another one. But you have to make sure you inoculate with the correct one. But if you keep – if Len plants hairy vetch once every 3 years, he doesn't have to keep inoculating. That bacteria will survive 3 or 4 years in the soil. But it colonizes the roots and makes nitrogen and helps the plant out, and the plant helps it out. So it's a great way to get, we call it free fertilizer, more or less. Mm-hmm. So that, yeah, absolutely, you have to inoculate. Otherwise, you don't get that nitrogen fix part of it with legumes.
Great stuff. Learned a lot tonight. Thank you, Ron, for being
Thanks,
here.
Ron.
So
welcome.
Fun.
And please join us again this summer. Love to have you. Lulu, Lance. Get out in the garden and get dirty.
As soon as it warms up.
Yeah, I was just going to say, as soon as it warms up, I'll be right on it.
Mm-hmm. All right. It is Tara coming up with One Woman's Perspective next. Thanks for listening to As the Worm Turns on KVNF. See you next week.
Have a good evening.
Good night, everybody.
Bye.
You've got a cute fast pocket master, which you can make both slow and faster. I don't know who you took a shine to, or who you're about to make a sign to. I got a gal that I love so, low, little low and low.